to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM. We're broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus, and we're streaming live at KUCI.org. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and I'm with Sherry LaPena. Sherry is the internationally best-selling author of the thrillers The Couple Next Door, A Stranger in the House, An Unwanted Guest, and Someone We Know, which have all been New York Times and the Sunday Times bestsellers. Her books have been sold in 37 territories around the world. She lives in Toronto. And today we'll focus primarily on her new novel, The End of Her, published by Pamela Dorman Books, a division of Viking. Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
Hi. So good to have you back on the show. You were on, I think, in 2017 with my co-host, Marie Stone. And so happy to have you back. And I wonder if we could begin with you talking about The End of Her and how the novel came about.
I was inspired to write it by something I read online, actually. It was a news story about a fellow who had been digging his car out of a snowbank during a bad blizzard in the United States. And it was taking a long time for him to dig out the car. And so his wife and child, who'd been playing out in the snow waiting, they got in the running car to get warm. And they died of carbon monoxide poisoning while he was shoveling out the car because the exhaust pipe was plugged with snow. So partly I treat this book as a public announcement, public service announcement. Always check that your exhaust pipe isn't plugged with snow. But when I read that, of course, it was declared an accident. But when I read it, I thought, oh my goodness, you know, if you wanted to kill your wife and child, what a brilliant way to do it, because it would be so easy to get away with it. You know, you don't have to get rid of the body. You don't have to have an alibi. It's just, you know, it's an accident. So I thought of having a book centered on a character who was in this position, and the whole book would be, you'd be wondering, did he in fact murder his wife and child on purpose, or was it just a dreadful accident? So that was the kernel for the book.
Hmm. And you have a great unreliable narrator in this novel, Erica. The reader doesn't know quite what to believe. How did she come about?
Well, I knew when I started the book, I knew that I would have this first wife who had died in the car several years before he marries again and has a new family. And I needed some way to bring his past forward to affect this new wife. And so the best way to do that was to bring in a woman from his past. And her name is Erica. And as it so happens, she's a rather calculating, immoral person who's out for herself. And so she pops up very early in the story and speaks to Patrick, who's the central character, and tells him that she thinks that he in fact murdered his first wife, and that she's threatening to go to the authorities to have them reopen the investigation. And that's what he's facing at the opening of the book.
You were a teacher and a lawyer before you became a writer. How did you segue into becoming a writer of thrillers and domestic suspense?
I guess I would say gradually, because I'd wanted to be a writer since I was very young, but I'd put it off thinking, you know, I had to make a living and I didn't think it was very practical. So I went to law school and became a lawyer, but I really didn't like being a lawyer. It didn't last more than a year or two. And then I became an English teacher and for a short while, and then I stayed home with my kids. So when my babies were born, I stayed home. And that's when I started writing in earnest. And I started out writing literary fiction, and I published a couple books of literary fiction. But then I decided to try my hand at thrillers, because that's really where my interest lies. And I'd put off writing thrillers because I thought they had to be plotted so carefully ahead of time, and I'm not a plotter. So I wasn't sure I could do it, but I sat down and tried it, and actually it was fine. I can write a thriller without having an outline or a plan, surprisingly. So I started writing, you know, at home during nap time for my kids. And it took about 16 years before, from when I started writing a little bit of literary fiction to when I finally got a thriller contract. So as I said, it was a gradual thing.
Yeah, it's interesting that you started with literary fiction. I'm curious about that because, you know, everybody is always saying if you're gonna write and hope to be published, and you're writing fiction, you should start with commercial fiction or mysteries or romance or something or other.
I actually think that. Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually think it's harder to write genre fiction. So I started with literary fiction simply because the demands of genre are a little more challenging for me anyway. I think if you start off writing and you're just writing character sketches and you're writing interesting descriptive bits and so on, it's more amenable to learning. So I started off that way, and my natural voice was actually comedic. I wrote comedies, but that's where I learned to write, was in writing my literary fiction. But demands of plot in commercial fiction are really quite daunting. So people always think that literary fiction is so difficult, and they think that genre fiction is so easy, and I beg to differ. I think it's difficult to write well. To write anything. I think there's a lot of not so great literary fiction. I think there's some brilliant literary fiction, and I think there's not so great genre fiction, and there's some brilliant genre fiction. And I think good writing is good writing. And I don't think that you can dismiss genre fiction as not good writing. It is quite demanding. I found literary fiction actually easier, to be honest.
Interesting. And in novels in general, there's so many moving parts, you know. Mm-hmm. I think no matter what you're writing, but I'm curious, because you don't plot at the beginning, how do you keep track of everything? Do you have a plot board or 3x5 cards tacked up all over your office, or, you know, how do you keep track of all the moving parts?
I don't have any big whiteboards or big sheets of paper or sticky notes or anything like that, although I've been advised by many people to do that. What I did start to do on my second, hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
What I did start to do around my second or third novel was I keep a running document with the date on it about where I think I might go the following day and what my thoughts are about where the plot might go in the next couple of days. And if I go back and I read that afterwards, I see months later how I was thinking and how different everything is. And it's just fun for me to do that, to see how the book evolves. But I can never really think more than a few days ahead. So as far as keeping the big picture all in my head, I credit my unconscious with that. I think on some level, my unconscious mind is keeping track of everything. But basically I wait until I'm finished and then I put it aside for a couple of days, and then I have to read it again as a whole because I've forgotten a lot of what's gone on early. But I haven't really forgotten it, but it's just not that fresh in my mind. So, and then I go into editing, and then everything has to work beautifully as a whole. So my first draft it's quite coherent, but it's not completely coherent. That coherence actually comes after a lot of reworking. So It is a lot to keep track of, especially with a thriller that has a lot of different plot lines and different characters' points of view. And I like to keep a lot of balls up in the air going at the same time, and I don't know who's done it until the end. So, it's tricky keeping it all straight, which is why it's great to have good editors who can point things out. But, you know, I think my unconscious mind does a pretty good job of it.
Well, speaking of domestic suspense and thrillers, I've seen your books in both categories, listed in both categories. I wonder how you think of them, and moreover, what your opinion is of how publishers seem to be obsessed with categorization.
Yeah, publishers are obsessed with categorization because of marketing. They need to be able to market the book effectively, and the bookstores need to know where to put it in the store. So that whole marketing angle is, sometimes a problem for writers who don't fit a category nicely. My literary fiction was a problem because it always straddled literary and commercial, and they never really knew where to put it. So yeah, publishers do tend to want to slot your books under a certain category simply to help them sell better. And you know, nobody can argue with that, but it's a problem if you write across different genres. But for me, I mean, thriller, domestic suspense, to me, it's all part of the same cloth. I mean, I don't want to think of myself as doing only domestic, but the truth is most of my books center on individuals and who they know, and generally their families and the people closest to them. So that's what I write. That's what I'm interested in. I'm interested in those really intimate relationships. So yeah, domestic suspense works, but thrillers also work. Crime fiction also works.
Well, I've read a couple of your novels, and I noticed that you like to use multiple point of view. And I'm curious what multiple point of view does for you that perhaps a single point of view would not.
Well, the great thing about a multiple points of view is that you can see more of the story. So when you're limited to one person's point of view, you're limited to what they know about what's going on. And that's tricky if you want to keep the reader sort of thinking in a lot of different directions. If you're limited to just one person's point of view, that's harder to do. Why I like using multiple points of view is because I can get into a number of different heads of different characters, and I can really make the reader wonder about all of them and not know who's telling the truth and what's going on. So I really enjoy it, partly because it's an easy way for me to manipulate the reader, and also because I really enjoy getting inside the heads of each of these characters, which I can do most easily, I find, if I'm in their point of view.
I wanted to talk a little bit about prologues too, because at least in my circles and with my students, prologues are very controversial. It's like, do you use a prologue? Do you not use a prologue? Are prologues good? Do readers read prologues? I tend to read short prologues, and so I appreciated your two-page prologue in the end of her. But I'm curious what you think and why you used a prologue here. And in general, do you like prologues? I mean, do you find them when you're reading? Do you like reading them? Do you have, ways of writing them so that you do keep those readers who don't like them?
Do you know what? It's never occurred to me that somebody would skip a prologue. I would never skip a prologue. So the answer to that for me is just you use a prologue if it works for the book. I'm certainly not always committed to them. I think some of my books have had them, and I think some have not. I don't think Couple Next Door had a prologue, but certainly The End of Her has a prologue. It's handy if you need to establish some information that's at a different time from the crux of your story. So with this one, you know, I had to do the little scene intimating that there was going to be a death of this first wife before I moved to the present time. But I would never use a prologue just for the sake of using a prologue, because, you know, there's no point in that. But I think with prologues, yeah, you keep them short, and there's to sort of intrigue the person into the novel, to pull them in.
Yeah, I've seen them too in italics, and I find if a prologue is in italics, my eyes skim right over it, you know.
Yeah, I hate italics. I'm getting older, and my eyesight's not what it was, and I really don't like italics. And I find when people do a lot of italics, when they're changing points of view and one person's point of view, or a whole, you know, earlier timeline is in italics, that really bothers me. It's very hard to read. So when I do my prologues, they're not in italics. They're just, you know, they're very obviously labeled prologue with a date, and then you don't have to deal with the italics. But yeah, my advice on prologues would be don't use them if you don't need them. And if you do need them, then keep it really short.
Keep it short. Yeah, I like that you have a date. And I'm looking at the book right now. So you jump from the prologue 2009 to August 2018. And, you know, that it's interesting using dates. I think it helps keep the reader on track.
And the writer, to be honest, when you've got one of the hardest things for me is, as we talked about before, is keeping it all straight. So when I'm writing my document, I will post the date and the day of the week in a comment on the side so I can refer back and make sure that the things are happening on the right day. You know what I mean? Right. Because it's easy to lose track and go, oh, someone's going into work on Sunday afternoon. That's not going to work. So dates do help, I think. They help locate the reader and the writer.
We have a few minutes left, and I wanted to ask you actually about the beginning when you started writing the thrillers, the domestic suspense novels. And you already said, I didn't realize you were a literary novelist to begin with. Did you keep your same agent? Was there a natural kind of evolution that everyone approved of, or did you find a whole new agent, or what happened?
Yeah, I did a completely different route. So I had a literary agent, and I knew that writing thrillers, I would need a thriller agent. I mean, it's a completely different field. Literary agents in Canada really aren't known for doing a good job for handling thrillers internationally. So I knew I wanted someone who specialized in thrillers, and I had someone in mind. And I got that person, you know, within 12 hours when I sent out my manuscript. So I was very happy about that. The thing is, with a good thriller agent, things will move much more quickly than they will with a regular literary agent. The literary world moves usually quite slowly. But yeah, I would strongly urge anybody who's writing, you know, for instance, a thriller, to really research and get a good thriller agent, just like a romance writer is better off with a good romance agent. Like they need to know, it's like a real estate agent. You need to know your neighborhood, you know?
And typically writers, especially, well, debut novelists, almost jump at the first agent that will have them, you know, and maybe.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. And I did that too when I was starting out, because it's so hard to get an agent. You're just so thrilled when one takes you and then they sit on your book for a long time and you don't really get anywhere. It's really, really hard to get into the game. But once you're in it, then you know everybody and you know who's good, and people will put in a word for you. And it's really tough cracking that boundary. So, you know, most of us commercial crime writers, you know, if we know a writer that's young and starting out, we'll try and give them a hand, you know, because it is so daunting and so difficult to get that first foot in the door.
Yeah, yeah. Who are your influences, or who are they now? And do you continue to read fiction when you're writing it?
Yeah, I always read fiction when I'm writing, because I'm always writing. Like, I'm writing a first draft or I'm revising. So, you know, I write 12 months a year pretty much. If I didn't, I would never make my book year deadline. So I'm always reading when I'm writing. My influences would be, you know, the classics of crime fiction, like Agatha Christie, certainly. Patricia Highsmith, you know, all of that sort of creepy I like the psychological stuff. And, you know, Gone Girl and books like that, you know, the ones with the psychological edge, not the pure whodunits, but the ones with the sort of psychological edge. And I read a lot of nonfiction as well about, you know, psychopaths and how to disappear and, you know, things like that that are interesting and help me in my work.
Yeah, I was listening to your interview with Marie that you did in 2017, there was a book you cited, Pretending You're Dead, or...
How to Pretend You're Dead, or... I've got that one somewhere in my bookshelf. It was how to Fake Your Death, which I needed to research for one of my books. I think it was A Stranger in the House.
Right, interesting
book on how to fake your death, and it had to do with... There are certain countries that it's easier to fake your death in, you know, like India and places like that, where you can get a fake death certificate. So, yeah, it's interesting. I find research quite interesting.
That's wild. That's wild. We are at the end of our time. I am curious if you have any last words or advice for the writers listening.
I think if you want to be a writer, you know it in your gut, and you're always, if you're a writer, then you're writing way before you get a contract or an agent. And the ones who stick with it, they're the ones that make it through. And I don't know any writers who didn't put in years and years of hard work before they got a break. And certainly I was no overnight success. As I said, I was writing for 16 years before I got my thriller contract. And that, you know, people, I know lots of writers, and this is pretty much the norm. There is no overnight success. If someone makes a big breakthrough, it's because they've put the work in for years and years writing. So I would say be very, very disciplined about it and write pretty much every day. And to write with the view to finding your own voice and what's specific to your voice, because that's what will sell your book. There's no point in trying to mimic anyone else because they've already done it. So I think with me, what's my selling point seems to be that everyone says they can't put my books down. It's that propulsion, that forward momentum that sort of is typical of my books. And that seems to be what my voice is. So I think a new writer, you really have to write what energizes you, what interests you, and find your own voice and your own way of doing it, and then try and find a good agent. But, you know, it's hard. Maybe rather than finding a good agent, one way to do it is to find other people writing in your genre who can help you out. Because, you know, just sending things into a pile is really hard.
Well, thank you so much. I so appreciate you taking the time today.
It was my pleasure.
The end of her I found quite propulsive, as you say, and there's so much more we could talk about, but I guess this is all the time we have. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I've been talking with Sherry LaPena. Her new novel is The End of Her, published by Pamela Dorman Books, a division of Viking. Thank you for listening. Marie will be with you next week. And all you writers out there, stay in the chair.